Guess who's back on Baseball Barbacast?
Jordan Schusterman is back and Jake Mintz is still here. If you were hoping that we were going to swap and Jake would take a week off, bad news. We're back together. I have moved to Ohio and I'm very excited to talk about every level of this sport that we love on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that practices fighting all offseason long. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Let's square up.
Let's do it. We're ready. We're ready to go at it. If Tommy Pham slides in hard into this podcast, I'm back, Jake. Hello. It is Monday. It has been a whole week since I last said words into this microphone on this here podcast. And a lot has happened. The Phillies and Yankees are still good. I know that. I know we had a weekend of course, action. We're going to do our normal weekend recap, although I think it is safe to say that we both watched a little bit less percentage of Major League Baseball than the average weekend, not just because I was moving, but because I was at the D3 World Series, because the Division I baseball tournament started, because the Women's College World Series is in progress. But this is still mostly a Major League Baseball podcast, and we are going to recap all 15 series. We have a smattering of other topics. It is great to be back. I, of course, am still settling into my new home here in Oberlin, Ohio, but the move went well. I'm very happy and excited about it, but I'm excited to be back. I enjoyed the podcast you did without me. I do listen to them, believe it or not, and I hope everyone else did too while I was gone.
If you live in Northeast Ohio, make sure you find Jordan's address and throw tomatoes at his windows. He would appreciate it.
Yes. Before I am renting, so please don't do that.
Oh, okay. Once he buys a house.
Then you can. Then it's all go. Then the green light is there. Yeah.
Before we get into the specific games from the weekend, just a quick note about Lou Gehrig Day, which was yesterday, commemorating Lou Gehrig and his battle with ALS and drawing attention to the disease. It got so much play yesterday, but Sarah Langs, friend of the show, one of our very good friends, to see her on the broadcast yesterday in Philly on Sunday Night Baseball was incredibly emotional and inspirational and heartwarming. And, you know, running into Sarah at the yard this year from time to time is an absolute delight. And there are a million different things I could say about Sarah Langs, but I think I'll just say this. I have never in my life had a conversation with Sarah Langs in which I felt worse or knew less after that conversation. And I think that is the true beauty of that person.
Yes. And you hear us kind of casually reference her all the time on here over the years on various iterations of the show where it's just like, oh, you know, let's get Langs on the case there. And the fact that we can still kind of say that with a straight face recently, because she's still doing her job at a better level than most of us while she is battling this horrific disease. And it's obviously impacted her life in a very real way. But even in the months before she kind of revealed this diagnosis to the world and has, of course, gotten so much support and so much attention towards this cause, man, you would never know. And you would still never know. I still kind of have to remind myself what she's battling with when she's texting me the most obscure possible stuff. And like, it's unbelievable what she's kind of been to the baseball world. And as I've said many times, we've said here, right? Like, you know, we say friend of the show, we kind of throw that around. And it is true. I mean, we don't say that lightly, but to call her a friend for someone who I admired for a long time before we got to know her, you know, when she was working in MLB Network and she was working in MLB. And of course, is really, really special. So everything you hear about her is true and more. And we are obviously always thinking of Sarah and excited to see her get whatever attention that she gets.
Absolutely. All right. Let's begin. Let's run through it. Sweeps. We had three, which is kind of the perfect number of sweeps to have in a weekend.
Yep.
I have to say. Yeah. Ideal. And we'll begin out in the Bay. Yankees, Giants, Aaron Judge playing at Oracle Park in San Francisco for the first time in his career, which is notable for two reasons. Reason number one, Aaron Judge is from kind of the area. He's about
closer
like 2 hours
than a lot
closer
of stadiums
to there than every stadium, except for Oakland.
Except for
technically
Oakland.
Closer to the Coliseum where he grew up, kind of inland, closer to Stockton than the Bay. But he did grow up a San Francisco Giants fan. So that is reason number one why it's important. Reason number two is that in the offseason ahead of 2023, Aaron Judge, and the San Francisco Giants almost got married, but instead, Mr. Judge returned to the Nueva York Yankees. Who could forget John Heyman's tweet, Arson Judge to Giants? One of a kind, unforgettable, will live in our hearts and minds forever. There was a period of time that Giants fans thought Aaron Judge was on their team. Instead, he is not. He could have been bearded playing at Oracle. Instead, he really is clean shaven. Really hard to imagine.
I can't even picture that. But yes, no, all of that prelude is appropriate. You know, I thought about putting out an extremely impossible to answer stupid Twitter poll, which was which was closer to actually happening, Aaron Judge Giant or Shohei Ohtani Blue Jay?
Aaron Judge Giant, it feels like.
Yeah, I think so. That's the thing. I've gone back and forth. You know, you could say both of them were always going to end up where they were going to end up. Of course, different reasons with Ohtani changing teams. But anyway, this isn't about Ohtani. The thing is, you know, Judge gives quotes, oh, I've dreamed about this for a long time. And all the Giants fans are like, oh, really? Well, you could have gotten it a lot sooner if you had just signed with us. And whatever. We don't need to relitigate the whole thing. But it was appropriate. Although I got to say, I didn't see. Did he get booed? I mean, I assume he did because he's on the Yankees. So that's kind of how it works when you're on the Yankees. You get booed anyway.
If you wear pinstripes, you get booed on the road. But, I will say quickly, outrageous amount of Yankees fans at this game. Like notable. I know wherever the Yankees play on the road, it's overwhelming. This was a lot. Well, this was heavy. They came in hot.
I don't know what game you were watching. You know, the Giants haven't exactly been tearing it up. Although, hey, only a half game out of the wild card spot. Come on, Giants fans. What's the big deal?
What's the problem? NL is a joke. Aaron Judge, in his return, arrival to the Bay, home run in his first game. Oh, just kidding. Two home runs in his first game. And then in game number two, a 460-foot first inning blast. Three dongs across the three games for Mr. Judge. And the Yankees win all three. They win game three on a outrageous comeback against Camilo Doval, where Juan Soto hits a go-ahead two-run shot on a grooved heater down the pipe. Yankees are on fire. Great. To me, it was the juxtaposition of Aaron Judge being on the Yankees and the Giants, who, holy crap, could they use an Aaron Judge type, which I understand is a ridiculous sentence to say. But there is an Aaron Judge-sized hole in this roster where the Giants have just been – they're so good at the margins at finding these little extra nuggets of wins around town.
Right.
But they just need a really good baseball player. And for Aaron Judge to roll an Oracle and show them what that looks like was, I would imagine, disheartening for Giants fans and more joy for Yankees fans.
Especially in a year like this year, right, where there's such an opportunity to be – in the second wild card spot, right? Like you just add Aaron Judge to the Giants and they're right up there with the Padres. We mentioned Aaron Judge last week, how he'd kind of turned it around. He's been the best hitter in baseball now for the past month or so. He's leading baseball. Okay, OPS, we've seen him do that. Homers, we've seen him do that. Walks, we've seen him do that. He's leading baseball in homers and doubles. That is very, very hard to do. And normally, you know, not the great hitters can't do both. But that is astonishing. And I mean, it's very simple. He looks like 2022 Aaron Judge, right? Last year, he was excellent, but it was not the same. He was very
awesome. He missed 2 months.
And he was hurt, right? But, you know, on and off. But again, also, right, we had the earlier this season. It was like, oh, what's wrong with him? It's like, guess what? Usually, the same thing we talked about with Jose Ramirez. The best players in the world, the best, that very, very, very small group, They will show up eventually. And I mean, holy crap, right? It's not like Juan Soto's cooled off either. So, you know, all the hyperbole, as much as we all want to roll our eyes and be exhausted by it, all the hyperbole, like, oh, this is what it was like, you know, watching all these great Yankees over the years. Yeah, no, it is. It's exactly what it is. We are watching all-time greats play together.
You think the Yankees are hot now? You know who rolls into New York this week, Jordan?
Oh, no. Who?
Take a wild guess. There are two answers here that would make sense. Go.
Well, but weren't the White Sox already there?
White Sox were already here, so who would be the perfect?
The Angels?
Come on, Jordan. Who do the Yankees want to play?
Who do the Yankees want to play? The Rays?
The Minnesota freaking Twins, Jordan Schusterman,
I'm
who
sorry,
have
I'm thinking of them
hot
in Minnesota, yeah.
Come on. And they have picked the pieces of their season back up once again, the Minnesota Twins. And now they will roll into New York where the Yankees will beat them. Probably in the first game, it'll be one run. The second game, it'll be 25. And the third game, it'll be one run again. Yeah. And that's just how things go. Twins, prove me wrong. Yankees are hot. Let's mention the other Yankees news now. I mean, Clark Schmidt on the IL, no throwing for 4 to 6 weeks, probably longer than that until he comes back. I believe it's a lat issue for him. But good news is that Gerrit Cole is going to pitch in a baseball game tomorrow on Tuesday in AA at Somerset, his first rehab appearance, his first time throwing off a mound against hitters in a game with a uniform on with stats that matter. The road back for him has been long, but it points to a mid to late June return for Cole, which, I mean, I don't need to explain why that would be important for the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, and just back to Schmidt quickly, right? Like, that's a situation where this Yankees rotation has been so good that losing him is unfortunate, but you're not really sweating it too much, especially with Luis Gil being the best pitcher in the league, ? So that's been pretty good for them. So now who they're going to call up to replace Schmidt for this stretch while Cole's still coming back, you know, that's, again, you're not as concerned about. I know Nestor didn't look great over the weekend, but you know, they're in decent shape here. But it is a reminder when we were talking about, oh, what are they going to do with Gil? What are they going to do? Whatever. Like, pitchers get hurt. Schmidt, who, you know, last year pitched more innings than he had in his career by a long shot, he, you know, gets hurt. He's been very solid to start the season, but now he goes on the IL for a bit. But man, Cole coming back at this point, I mean, it's basically gone exactly as you could have hoped so far. It was still, you know, I'm not going to believe that Gerrit Cole is, you know, back and being Gerrit Cole until I'm watching it in the big leagues. And I think that's an okay standard. But hey, man, we've seen some of these guys have taken, we have some pretty promising examples recently of guys taking the rest and coming back and looking awesome with Kyle Bradish and Brian Wu. So clearly it is possible, and we don't just have to doom everyone to Tommy John. And I'm excited to see Gerrit Cole pitching again.
You took a week off and you sound fine. Great. So yeah,
thank you.
It can be the case for everybody. All right. Moving on to another sweep, the Brewers taking all three from the Chicago White Sox. Let's talk about the Brewers briefly. First, while you were away, Jordan, the Brewers opened up what I believe to be the single largest division lead in baseball. How about that? Oh, they are 7 games ahead of the St. Louis Cardinals, the largest gap atop any division. Yes, your face. Okay. You're like, holy crap.
Yeah, no, it's true. Right. So Braves are 6.5 back and Padres are 6.5 back for those who don't believe Jake. But no, that's very impressive. And again, that is, the Brewers have been excellent all season, but they keep on rolling. They've won 8 of their last 10. This is, again, what do great teams do? They take care of business. White Sox come to town, they kick their ass. Sunday was a little bit closer, but ultimately they get the job done. We have another bit of a fracas on Sunday. Essentially, Tommy Pham gets sent home to score on a sacrifice fly. He is out by a lot.
By a mile. Yes. Quick thing on this, watch the highlight back, and Tommy Pham, I got a question about this, is essentially running on the grass. Right? He is incredibly close to the field of play. The reason he's doing that is he knows, or he thinks he's going to be out by a lot, and because the ball is hit to left field,
he's trying to block the throw. Yep.
He's trying to block the throw. So what he's either trying to make it harder for the catcher to see the ball coming in because of the angle, or he is hoping the ball donks off of him and bounds away. Right. The likelihood of that gets higher the closer he is to the field side of the line. It is a very bizarre visual when you're sliding that far to the side. He's out at home. William Contreras, Brewers catcher, best catcher in baseball, is fired up. Pham turns around, thinks he's chirping at him. Pham yells back. There's a fake baseball fight. Bench is half clear. White Sox broadcaster John Schifrin gets freaking fired up, saying, "We don't take that." Blood thinks he's on the team. That was a classic moment.
Best line. I'm sorry. The Schifrin line that I understand where this was coming from, but it was pretty hilarious. Where he says, "We're not going to take that. It doesn't matter how many L's we've got. We're not going to take that." And I'm like, oh, no.
Well, I think that you maybe surpassed the amount of L's where you are going to take that, I think.
They're at L11 for the White Sox, yes, as they sink to, they have reclaimed their crown as the worst record in baseball by a lot. They are 15-45. That is a horrific record in Major League Baseball.
Let's be clear here. They are on pace. We'll get back to Tommy Pham in a second. They are on pace for the worst record in the expansion era. That's since 1961. The 1962 Mets, I believe, have the lowest win total in the expansion era with 40 wins. They went 40 and however many losses that is, 122, right? The White Sox are at 15 wins, which works out to like 40 wins over a 160-game season.
Dude, minus 138 run differential. The next worst is the Rockies at minus 79. Marlins minus 82. They're atrocious. Anyway, so Tommy Pham gets upset. And Tommy Pham, who, remember when Tommy Pham first signed and then they won like a handful of games in his first few? And it was like, oh, here we go, Tommy Pham effect. Listen, there's only so much Tommy Pham can do. He says after the game, this is actually, I think the interesting part about this was not the quote that everyone posted, but I'll read the Tommy Pham quote. It was a shallow fly ball to left field. You would expect the left fielder to throw the base runner out in that play. The third base coach sends you, you've got to go. Pause. This is Tommy Pham just being like, why is he sending me? This is a joke.
Bingo.
which again, so that's the first point that he's making, which again, correct, I think speaks more to the larger situation here. Anyway, then he continues. I'm nailed out at home by a mile. I'm going to the dugout. I hear the tough guy, Contreras, with all the hoorah shit. I never start anything, but I'll be prepared to finish it. There's a reason why I do all kinds of fighting in the offseason, because I'm prepared to F somebody up. So take it as what it is.
Okay, so let's, couple things. When he says the hoorah, when they asked Contreras after the game, I think Contreras was just amped up. I don't think he was necessarily.
You get an out there was of a little home, clip of him.
There was a clip of him like waving the glove at Tommy Pham, but come on, it's fine. Right. Tommy Pham, let's just be clear though. This is true. Tommy Pham is about it.
He's definitely prepared. Tommy, we know that. Yeah. Yeah.
This is not, he is a man who has walked the walk that backs up this talk.
To that point, can I just say this? Okay, so he says this, and then everyone's like, print the t-shirts. Oh, blah, blah, blah. This is, by the way, exhausting, right? Now it's just everything has to be t-shirt. Guess what? You wouldn't wear that t-shirt because you're not Tommy Pham. You person can't sitting on Twitter, you're not. It's not. Tommy Pham can say this because that's Tommy Pham, right?
Correct.
This is a Tommy Pham exclusive situation.
This is part of why players, I mean, like from our perspective and from a fan's perspective, Tommy Pham and his unwavering intensity is silly at times because the monotony of baseball and the length of the season is a bizarre combination with him. If he was playing, you know, soccer in the Premier League where he was playing once a week and he was this amped up, it would make a lot more sense. Or if he was in the NFL playing 17 games, it would make, you know, it would feel more appropriate for the flow of the season. In baseball, it comes across at times as bizarre. However, I absolutely love it. And it is a reason why teammates respect the heck out of this guy. People really enjoy playing with him because he brings a different type of energy that has very often helped ball clubs establish a culture, right? Or amplify a culture, or, you know, supplement a culture. And this happened last year in Arizona. He is a great player to have in October. Someone will trade for him. He will help that team. I am pro Tommy Pham. And when we say he does fighting in the offseason, I'm curious as to what he means. I imagine it's like Rumble or kickboxing.
Yeah,
I don't think he's just going out.
Right. This is not hopefully, you know, street fighting, but who knows? Who knows? Anything is possible.
Don't talk about it. Don't talk about Tommy Pham's fight club.
That's true. I wouldn't dare. Well, he appears to be talking about it.
He did talk about it.
if this is some version of Fight Club, Tommy Pham does not care to be keeping it any level of secret. Anyway, look, dude, Bruce, if
we had Madison Bumgarner doing, you know, hog tying, lasso.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff in the offseason secretly. Yeah. If Tommy Pham was doing bare knuckle boxing, you know, in he'll December, you know. I'd be like, yeah.
He'll let you know. Brewers sweep, L11 with the White Sox. They are very bad. The Brewers are very good. And like you said, like they are be very good while the rest of the division can't get out of its own way.
Yeah. John Shriffin, who we mentioned, White Sox broadcaster, first year White Sox broadcaster. Tough gig, got to say, for him.
Yes.
Maybe give him a little bit of leeway. I mean, he's replacing Jason Benetti, who is you know, the GOAT.
Yes.
Although he had a very hilarious moment on Saturday, I believe. Did you see this one?
No.
So the Brewers beat the White Sox.
Okay? Yeah, that happens.
And they're beating them during the game. And they're talking about, you know, on the broadcast, like how the White Sox have been struggling. And Shriffin says, quote,
"Oh my
God, it feels like this run that the Sox are on. We're catching teams at the wrong time." And Steve Stone, the color commentator, just freaking laughs because the idea that the White Sox are unlucky or the unfortunate, you know, beneficiary of catching teams at the wrong time, when you're 15-1,000, it doesn't apply.
I would say actually what he's saying is correct. However, it's the other way around, right? The other teams are just catching the White Sox at the right time, which is all the time.
All the time. There's no bad time for
that's really, I think, the better way to put it. Last thing on the Brewers, and then we'll move on to our final sweep, is they're playing the Phillies this week in Philadelphia. So, again, this is nice little juicy matchup.
They play today.
Okay. They play today.
And do you know what else that means?
What does that mean?
The return of Rhys Hoskins
to
the
right.
City of brotherly love, the beloved how do you say that word? Prodigal?
Prodigal.
People are going to dunk on me.
Prodigal.
Son has returned.
Oh, he's back.
Returned
he's
over back. The weekend.
Okay.
He's back while you were moving.
Yes.
He came back.
Good. I was worried. All right. Nice. Yep. Nice.
He'll be there. He's going to play. It'll be very cool. I am not going. Probably should be, but I'm not.
That's okay. I'm
a bum.
You've been to enough places.
I've been on I-95 enough recently.
Yeah,
all right.
You can take a rest.
Last sweep. The Seattle Mariners, who are very weird. What a weird team. They swept. And friends, you're never going to believe this. Okay. The Seattle Mariners won all three games against the Los Angeles Angels because they got three really good starts.
Whoa.
From starting pitchers.
What?
They did not allow a run. Starting pitchers
not
across
one.
20 innings. Brian Wu on Friday, Bryce Miller on Saturday, and Luis Castillo on Sunday.
Yeah, this is the whole thing, right? This is what, I mean, it helps, you know, when you're facing a not so good team, but this is what the Mariners have that a lot of teams don't, and this is why they are going to remain relevant until the end of the season, no matter how low their batting average is. And to that point, they fired one of their hitting coaches, who they just hired a few months ago. They relieved Brant Brown of his duties, aka relieved him of having to watch the Mariners hit 200 anymore. Now, how much Brant Brown had to do with that is anybody's guess, but it does seem that he did not exactly take in the room in the way that they had hoped. And so they move on. They already had, it was already kind of a co-hitting coach situation. Jarrett DeHart, who's been there for a while and is very well-liked, he remains in place. And, you know, they'll bring in some other guys there. But actually, you know who another
Joseph.
Guy? Yeah, Tommy Joseph is a part of that coaching staff, which is very interesting. But yeah, it is obviously strange to see a team in first place fire anybody. You know, I guess, hey, listen, Astros fired their GM after winning the World Series. So that opened the door for any kinds of possibilities here. And listen, yeah, the Mariners hitting has not been good. I think we always question how much does the hitting and pitching coach have to do with that. But I think this is a situation where it just wasn't working out. They wanted to mix it up. Of course, they go and score a bunch of runs this weekend. That has more to do with the Angels, I'm sure. But I think they looked at the talent they have on offense and said, this should be better than it is. And this is a way we can at least address some level of urgency, right? That is something that I think to some degree the fans mildly appreciate. Not that you want to see people fired, but again, it doesn't really matter because the way the Mariners are going to get anywhere is by preventing the other team from scoring. And they continue to do that at a very, very high level.
Two thoughts on this. One, relieving offensive coordinator Brant Brown of his duties is a beautiful paella of modern baseball jargon.
It is.
Right? The idea that a baseball team has an offensive coordinator is funny in and of itself. That's the first point. The second thing is, if you are a first-year coach, and you get canned 2 months into the season of your first year, you were not doing something right, or your message was not taking. Because in this sport, because it's so many games, teams will usually allow time for your message to win people over. So this is a recognition that whatever Brant Brown's shtick was or is, whether it is good or bad, the Mariners front office did not think it was going to eventually work.
Yep.
And that is why this is a unique situation. It's not that a good, to me, it's more than a good team relieved a hitting coach of his duties, of his poopies. It's that they did it to a first-year guy 2 months into a season.
Yeah, well, first-year guy. I mean, he'd been the Dodgers hitting coach. He'd been, like, it's not like this is some
rookie. No, but a first-year guy with that team.
Exactly, right. Because normally, oftentimes, with hitting and pitching coaches, it's like, oh, it's getting stale. You know, he's been here for too long and past the expiration date. And I think that's a great point that you just made. That it's like the fact that it clearly, probably from pretty early, was like, oh, this is maybe not going in the right direction.
That tells me that there are people in that room who it was just like, nope, this is not going to get better.
Exactly. The only Angels thing, they optioned Reed Detmers. The second time he's been optioned since throwing a no-hitter. Tough. I'm not going to pile on the Angels. They're just not very good. The only other Mariners thing I just want to mention is their home. I know it's like, oh, of course they're going to, you know, better at home and the pitching, it's a pitcher's park. This year it's pretty extreme. Like even the pitchers in particular are almost unbeatable at home and have scuffled at times on the road. Castillo has some pretty extreme splits. But yeah, now they're now 21-11 at home, one of the best home records in baseball, 13-16 on the road. So obviously, again, the offense is going to have to pick it up to some degree, and that's going to have to happen in whatever venue it is. But yeah, that's definitely something to monitor. They're four games up on Texas, which is certainly impressive. They they go 6-1 on the homestand. They don't ultimately mop the Astros, but they do sweep the Angels. And now they go to Oakland. So not that Oakland is as much of a pushover as I think Oakland's better than the Angels at this point, to be honest, but it is still an opportunity for the Mariners to continue to kind of gain ground there.
Reed Detmers, first round pick, has shown flashes. It was spectacular in April this season.
Yeah.
If I was another team,
thought it was happening. Yeah.
I would trade for him so quickly. He is such a perfect buy low dude It's clear to me, I know Barry Enright, who's the new pitching coach there, has a very good reputation. It's clear to me that the talent is there with Reed Detmers, but I think he's receiving some muddled messages maybe about approach, about pitch mix, about mentality. He is a good pitcher who needs consistency and I think would thrive in a winning environment.
I agree. It's interesting because Tyler Anderson has really turned it around. He's been like very, very good for them this year in his second year in Anaheim. But Detmers has obviously gone backwards in the last month, and that is super disappointing.
All right, let's hit turbo mode before we take a break. Two splits, Mets and Diamondbacks. The Mets win the first two games of this series against Arizona after the team meeting, and everything looks fine and dandy. Can the Metsies turn the season around? The answer is a definitive probably not. They lose on Saturday. Pete Alonso got dunked on for some. Do you see his comments?
I did not. I didn't see anything.
He said something along the lines of it was good. The Mets had a late rally to cut the lead down in the ninth.
Oh,
good.
Like he moral said victory. It was good to get the.
Well, no, he said it was good to get the closer in the game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which was just made funnier because on Sunday, Paul Sewald came into the game and shut the Mets down in the ninth inning. So they got him in there twice. On Sunday, the Mets blow a one-run lead in the ninth inning, and they lose.
Yeah,
and
they're
like, look.
By the way, JD, I did not realize how good JD's been. I know he's striking out a lot, but like he's basically been exactly what you could have hoped. Pete's been good. Lindor has been heating up. They have had, you know, occasionally solid starting pitching. And yeah, I mean, I know Diaz is hurt now, and he certainly was struggling before that. But the Reed Garrett regression has been pretty painful to watch. I know Diekman had been good before Sunday. Ottavino is going through it right now. And this is not a team built to win a lot of games in a row. It's really not.
And that's a fact. I mean, I believe that the Mets' biggest crime is that they're not interesting more than that they're not good. Because I didn't think they'd be very good, but they're just not. Here's an example. I go to Citi Field a good amount, and I'm in no way am I ever have this year excited to watch the New York Mets, right?
Yeah. That's, and there's this, they have good players. That's the thing. It's like they have some talented players, and it's just not quite there. As for Arizona, they are also kind of stuck in the mud. I think we're still hopeful that they could get back into the mix because the NL wild card is in, especially the third and second one is so bad that like they're definitely not out of it. But man, have they been underwhelmed, continue to be underwhelming. Yeah. Like Corbin Carroll still is struggling, and their offense is really, really going through it right now.
I really believed the first game of the series on Thursday, where Zach Gallen left with an injury after just six pitches.
Yep.
Okay. And then the Diamondbacks bullpened their way through the rest of the game. I was like, this is the Diamondbacks baseball. I know. They are playing a very close game against the Mets, using their bullpen, pinch hitters, pinch runners, doing the little things, right? That's Diamondbacks baseball, the snakes alive that went all the way to the World Series last year. Just hodgepodging through it. Fortunately, the Mets came back late and won that game. But I think that that experience reminded these Diamondbacks, right? What are we? What's our identity? You know, we need to band together with
it's the same guys. It's everyone is there except for Jock. But another new face, Jock's been great. Listen, I guess he's been better because he's been pitching than Snell, but Jordan Montgomery got blasted over the weekend, 8 runs. His ERA is over 5. I know he's at least been giving them length, which is of course good. But it turns out maybe you do need spring training. So that's been unfortunate to watch. And their pitching is just getting real thin now, right? Like Merrill Kelly's still out now. Gallen is injured. Fott is doing his best. But I am worried about the D-backs on the mound. But if they can heat up offensively at some point, then maybe they can stay in it.
And congratulations to Eugenio Suarez, who has cut his K rate from 30.8% to 28.3%.
All right.
Don't look at any other numbers of his. Okay.
All right.
That's all you need to know. All right. The other split over the weekend, Tigers, Red Sox, 2-2. We had a Jack Flaherty no hitter watch in one of these games. Other than that, to be honest with you, didn't watch a whole lot of this. Yeah, we had the debut of Jamie Westbrook, who was the closest thing we were going to get to Drew Maggi this year in terms of a lifelong career minor leaguer finally getting a taste of the big leagues. Jamie Westbrook was drafted as a high schooler in 2013, which means he is the same age as we are. And it makes me feel old that the minor league hero is our age, right?
Well, that, but also to think like he's been playing minor league baseball for as long as we've been doing this, right? Like we started this the same year, senior year of high school, 2013. And as we reached the majors, you know, fortunate for us, a lot faster than Jamie Westbrook. He played over 1,000 minor league games. He gets up, so congrats to him. But otherwise, now that's okay, great. Oh, Jamie Westbrook finally makes it up. Well, on the other side of things, also the Red Sox, incredible tweet from Liam Fennessy, one of my favorite Red Sox fellows.
He's so good, dude.
He's so funny. But just they are as mid as it gets. They have been at 500, I think, like 15 separate times this year. They are now 30-30. And this is kind of every time in the first 2 months we've been like, I can't figure out the Red Sox. What that probably means is that they're heading for 81-81. And so that is certainly seems to be what is going on with the Red Sox. I know Garrett Whitlock is hurt now. Not that he's been great. Anyway, Tigers, quickly. Jamie Westbrook comes up for the Red Sox. Oh, amazing. Jake.
Quickly. Talk about a mid-off between these two teams.
Yes. The Tigers, because of the trajectory, we still view them a little bit more favorably. We still view them as like, oh, well, it's interesting. But again, you know, I've been lower on them. Here's the point. Here's the news. Spencer Torkelson's going back to AAA. 2020
Spencer
draft.
Torkelson?
2020 draft, first overall pick. 2020 draft. Reed Demers is also 2020 draft. That draft is having a rough go of it right now, the top of that draft. What a surprise, the draft where nobody could see any players for 3 months, maybe had some struggles. Spencer Torkelson, who it seemed like, you know, last year he was, okay, he was not putting up a lot of war, but it was like, all right, like this is, he didn't seem to be off track. It was like, okay, like the power is there. If we can kind of iron some stuff out, this can be a good major league hitter.
He's 23. He hits 31 home runs. Yes. That is fine. That's okay. Yes. This year, the bottom falls out. When he was demoted yesterday, he was slashing .201 batting average, .266 on base, and .330 slug. That is a .597 OPS, a .70 OPS plus with 100 being league average. He was the worst everyday first baseman in baseball, I believe, not named Rowdy Tellez. And it's a bummer because this was supposed to be the guy, right? This was the face of the franchise elect. You cannot be the face of a franchise in Toledo, Ohio. No disrespect to Northwest Ohio, but it is very difficult to lead a team from AAA. And Spencer Torkelson needs to figure it out. This is a bummer. His inability to be what he was supposed to be is a reason, a legitimate reason, that the Detroit Tigers are, I believe, a game under 500. While Bobby Witt, who is doing the thing, and the Kansas City Royals are 11 games above 500. Obviously, there are other reasons, but that is a notable one.
Yeah, I think Spencer Torkelson is not doomed, but again, this is a large sample now of struggling to be a productive overall hitter. 3 for his last 37. That's why you end up going to AAA, right? Like, clearly they were going to have a long leash with this guy because he was hitting for enough power and there was enough there, but so far, as a pro, the hit tool, the ability to make adjustments, and I'm not saying he needs to hit 300, but he has been clearly vulnerable enough against big league pitchers to the point where they are not scared of him and they can get him out a lot. He'll run into a ball here and there. The power has shown up, and there are to the point where there are probably adjustments he can make to get back to being closer to what he was last year, if not better. But right now, he is a vulnerable hitter, and that is why he has to go back to AAA, because he is not a tenable situation at the major league level. So it is a huge bummer. The last thing on this, just because it's so funny, Evan Petzold, the Tigers writer for the Detroit Free Press, tweeted out, okay, Tigers option, Spencer Torkelson with AAA, Toledo per sources. And the photo attached to this image for this tweet that has been shared, retweeted 300 times with nearly 1,000 likes, is one of the funniest, unintentionally funniest things I've ever seen. The Tigers at some point added, we had our home run celebrations, some sort of, how would you even describe this? It's a pizza on like a spear, which appears to be some level of Little Caesar's nod. Anyway, this is a photo of Spencer Torkelson holding this pizza on a spear. But he looks very sad. And so presumably he looked happy earlier in this sequence. But for the photo, for the news story that he's going down to AAA, you have to have it be a little bit more somber. And I just encourage people to go look at this. I'm sorry, Spencer. This is just, unfortunately, one of the funniest things I've seen all season.
It's sad pizza spear. It's quite a juxtaposition, right? It's a home run celebration, not home run mourning. All right, Jordan, let's take a break. And when we return, we will really put this thing into overdrive and zip through all of the baseball. Again, all of the baseball that we definitely watched. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's be honest with the listeners, okay? Let's be honest. Let's be real. Let's open up. This weekend, I spent a ton of time watching college baseball because it was the regionals. All of the games we're going to talk about, I watched some of this, okay? Obviously, we cannot watch all of the baseball all the time. However, Jordan, I did wake up early this morning and watched all of the highlights from the weekend that was.
Oh, so on one point. Take it away. Because I, again, 7.5
speed
I'm gonna,
on YouTube.
There you go. I'll pop in here and there and say, Vlad played third. The Cubs have lost 8 of their last 10. I got a couple notes in here. For the most part, this was not the most Major League Baseball that I've watched on an average weekend. Let's go through it. The 2-1 series victories start us off with the Minnesota Twins over the Houston Astros.
Let Jake cook. Twins take 2 out of 3 in Minute Maid Park. Always fun when Carlos Correa goes back to Houston, Texas to play against his old pals. Game one, Pablo Lopez is good. They win. Minnesota wins, which is good because Lopez has not been good this year. Game two, Jose Abreu, first homer of the season. Backside tater off of Joe Ryan to the right field seats. Abreu, who was sent to the farm downstate, a.k.a. the Astros spring training complex, to figure things out and rejuvenate himself. And whatever they did, is it working? Who can say? But he did hit a home run. Astros win game two. Game three, the Twins take it. Trevor Larnach emerging from the nebulous muck of corner bats that the Twins have. Jose Miranda is good this year again after falling off a cliff. Last year, my favorite interview from this was Simeon Woods Richardson, who's a pitcher on the Twins, is from the Houston area, I believe, and they were doing an in-game interview with his parents on the Astros broadcast, and he allowed a bomb during that interview with Julie Morales, and so she's sitting there talking to the parents, and then he gives up a monster tater, and the Astros broadcast can't be too happy because it's clearly uncomfortable, and they nail it. It's very funny. Go back and watch that. Royce Lewis coming back this week for the Twins. Perfect timing because they need every ounce of magic they get as they head to their own personal hell, the Bronx. Anything else on this?
No, keep it going.
Great. Rangers over the Marlins in a series that gripped the American imagination. Game one was a showdown of Marlins pitchers gone by. Jose Urania, who is most famous for throwing at Ronald Acuna's head and allowing the first home run of the 2018 season to Ian Happ, in my mind at least. They faced off in game one, which was hilarious. Raise the banner, Sixto Sanchez got out of the first inning. Remember, Sixto was not ridiculed, but very heavily criticized by his manager, Skip Schumacher, for being awful in the first inning all season long. He allows a leadoff single, double play, and then gets out of the first inning. Miami gets to Texas's pitching and wins game one.
I just want to say, and then you can fly through two and three. Sixto is their only right-handed pitcher. The Marlins are going to lead baseball in lefty starts by a long shot this year. I'll have some more notes on that later this week. And then Jose Urania has not been that bad. He's got 3.74. Like that is a very, I mean, he's 1-5 and, you know, the Rangers need more help than that. But like he has been shockingly competent for them. So anyway.
Game two and game three, blah. Michael Lorenzen really good for the Rangers in game two. Heaney was really good in game three. They take that series in Miami. Rangers, put that thing into overdrive. Please, please do that. That would be really nice. Wyatt Langford is back. He has yet to hit a home run over a fence, I believe. And that is wild considering he did it quite a few times, both in the minors last year and at the University of Florida in college. Next series, Braves over A's in the Who Won All of the Trades Super Bowl that we did together. Game one, Reynaldo Lopez is money in the bank. He's been phenomenal. He should and will be an all-star. Speaking of all-stars, Chris Sale in game two, pummeled, pulverized,
destroyed.
Punished, yeah. Destroyed by the Oakland A's. They send him to the showers early. I believe he allowed 8 earned runs. The Braves come back because the A's stink. The A's manager, Mark Kotze, gets ejected, and then the A's come back. Miguel Andujar, big game in game two. Game three, Charlie Morton's really good, and the Braves win on a Sean Murphy, like, dinky dunker to win the series. Anything on that?
Who won all those Braves and A's trades? Apparently the Brewers did. Let's move on to Cleveland and Washington. I was actually at this game on Saturday, or at least the first couple innings, before I went to go watch D3 Baseball, because of course I did. Yeah, I mean, Guardians keep on rolling. Can't quite get the sweep done. The Victor Robles era is over in D.C. He was, of course, their longest tenured player, or one of their longest tenured players, alongside Patrick Corbin, who is very much still playing, but Victor Robles getting squeezed out as Lane Thomas returns, and eventually James Wood will arrive. Victor Robles, that is a different podcast we will do. Sorry to my Nats fan brother who wants to hear me talk about Victor Robles more. David Fry keeps on keeping on. He hits another home run. And the Guardians are very weird, but they are very good, and they maintain a decent lead. I guess they are now 4 games up over Kansas City.
Blue Jays, Pirates, the Blue Jays debuting their City Connect uniforms, which they have dubbed Night Mode. And what better way to debut Night Mode than to play a 14-inning game on Friday night. The Jays and Pirates go deep into the evening with the Blue Jays scoring two runs in the bottom of the 14th inning. With a Davis Schneider two-run blast.
Yeah, his first opposite field home run of his career, I believe. He's now batting leadoff. And yeah, they win the series. Bo is still really going through it. Vlad played third base on Sunday for some reason. Rowdy Tellez looked better for the Pirates being back in Toronto. I guess that was nice for him. But yeah, I mean, this was, again, it's nice to get a series win, but still not looking easy for Toronto whatsoever. They have a massive, massive opportunity coming up this week. Whether that's an opportunity or a being mopped opportunity, Baltimore Orioles are coming to town to face the Toronto Blue Jays for four. And let's use that as a transition to their series over the weekend, which they took 2 of 3 over Tampa Bay.
Yeah, but that's not the news, because Mike Elias hit everybody with an all-time Friday news dump. He said, hey, I got to do a little press conference, the GM of the O's. Hey, come here. I got good news and bad news. And everyone was like, really? And he was like, no, it's just bad news. There's no good news. The good news is we're good. The good news is the Orioles are good.
Gunnar Henderson's on our team and like we're still really good. Yeah.
The Orioles themselves are the good news. The bad news is that two of the Orioles pitchers, John Means and Tyler Wells, need Thomas Johnson surgery or some sort of related equivalent to reconstruction or repair. They are going to have a scalpel in their elbow or on their elbow and have surgery and will not throw another pitch for the rest of the season. This is particularly a bummer for Means, who had Tommy John surgery in May of 2022, worked all the way back, pitched a little bit at the end of last year, struggled with his recovery. Looked pretty good in his first couple starts this season, and his velo is down in his last start. He's going to need to have another procedure. Tyler Wells was good in the rotation to start the season. The expectation is he was eventually going to go into the bullpen. He's super tall. They were going to use him as like a, Felix Bautista fake Costco replacement. He is going to need TJ. That's a bummer. Besides, but two awesome guys, like two great dudes, and it's a bummer that they need to go through surgery. Orioles are a machine, though, and they win on Friday and Saturday behind Albert Suarez on Friday, who is a miraculous story. 36 years old, played in like every foreign league. Orioles picked him up in spring, and he throws five innings, one run on Friday in a spot start. He'll be in the rotation for the foreseeable future until Dean Kremer gets back. Cole Irvin also moved back into the rotation when Kremer got hurt. He was pretty solid on Sunday for the Orioles, even though they lost that game. O's also win game two, four homers in that one. Kyle Bradish was not good, but the bullpen picked him up, Mountcastle, with a pair of blasts. Orioles are fine. The one news nugget that I should tell you, because you weren't watching ball, Craig Kimbrell, totally fine. He has had eight consecutive scoreless outings, I believe, since he was horrible.
Yeah, that's relievers, and he's capable of doing that. It's going to be interesting how their rotation shakes out. Irvin, I know he doesn't strike anybody out, but him being competent has just been massive for them this year. And hey, Corbin Burnes is hanging out at the top of this rotation. Like, I can't believe we've just accepted that as a very normal reality. But it is, again, credit to Mike Elias for making that happen. All right, we got four left. Let's go to the Cubs. Yikes, Jake.
Big freaking yikes. Yuck. Let's talk about this more on Wednesday, because it needs more of a deep dive. That is what has happened to the Cubs and how they've gone from in the mix to not as much.
They're in the mix, but that's not because they're doing anything right.
But they're in the wrong mix. They were in the division mix, and now they're in the wild card mix.
Great point.
What happened to them over the weekend? They hosted the Reds in game one. Javier Assad, the greatest pitcher on planet Earth, was pretty good. But a late Santiago Espinal ding dong wins it for the Reds. Dramatic moment in this one was a relay from the left field corner to nab Nick Madrigal at home in the ninth inning for the tying run. The Reds, how do I say this guy's name? Jacob Herdebees?
Yeah, Herdebees. Yes. Very fun.
He's the first big leaguer to attend West Point Army.
Undrafted.
Undrafted. Kind of a crazy story for him. So the Reds win that one. Their first one-run win in their last 10 one-run games.
Oh, wow. Right. Insane. They were 1-11. So, yeah, about time the Reds can squeak out a couple close ones.
Yeah.
Big series win for them. I mean, they're still in last place and you know, very far behind, but they needed this.
Game two in this series felt like a big turning point for the Cubs. It was very dramatic. It's pouring in Wrigley, like very wet, very moist on the north side. Seiya Suzuki, bases loaded, two outs early on in the game, drops just a routine fly ball, all three runs score. And it's like, oh my God, the Cubs. Then Seiya hits a grand slam to take the lead. Reds tie it up. Dansby Swanson, two-run bomb in the eighth, breaks the tie. Cubs win. And it's like, that's the moment. That's the turning point. Except it's not, because the Reds win the game on Sunday. Early bomb from TJ Friedl. Nick Lodolo's good. And the Cubs have lost 8 of 10 and have fallen behind the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's talk more about the NL Central, I think, on Wednesday.
Yeah,
Next series, Padres over the Royals, game one. KC has a late lead, and their bullpen just can't handle it. We talked to Jake Eisenberg about this. They need another reliever or two.
No, they do.
Awesome
they
play do. In this one.
I think they'll go get it. But yeah.
Awesome play in this one. I highly recommend going to watch. Tatis on third, less than two outs. Pop fly in short left field. Witt backtracks towards the ball like he's running towards the outfield. His momentum's going away. And Tatis is Tatis, so he goes home. He tries to go home. It's a play at the plate. Six slide from Tatis. Great tag from Salvi. He's out. Just like good baseball. Just great baseball. Bobby Witt doing something cool. Tatis trying to do something cool. Salvi doing something cool. Highly recommend watching that clip. Game two, Vinny has a huge day on his bobblehead day. Vinny P with a homer. I think he has three hits. Bases loaded double from Ha-Sung Kim is enough for the Padres. And then, man, San Diego would have swept, but Matsui with a disaster out of the pen for them as the Royals score three runs in the bottom of the ninth to win by one.
Yeah. Suarez, who has been arguably, you know, one of the best closers in the league this year, he pitched on Friday and Saturday, so he was unavailable on Sunday, and Matsui just kind of can't get the job done. But, you know, the Royals fought. They even scored five in the ninth on Friday. So they were clearly up for it. But this is a really big series win for San Diego. I think that seeing them kind of start to get some quality victories is very impressive. And they currently sit, I mean, they're only 32-30, but they are in that NL wildcard two spot with that record because of how blah everybody else has been. Let's do this. And ready? This is going to be 10 seconds. The Dodgers take two of three over the Colorado Rockies. The Dodgers offense looks like crap on Friday, and everyone's like, oh God, their offense isn't fixed. And then they win the series because it's the Dodgers against the Rockies. That was the first series they played all year. Dodgers fans, fear not. You get to play the Rockies 10 more times this year.
Woo!
One more, Jake. Sunday night baseball.
Quickly, outrageous travel thing. So the Dodgers were here in New York to play the Mets. They flew home to play three against the Rockies. Now they're flying back to the East Coast to play Pittsburgh and the Yankees.
And I will be there for Dodgers Pirates this week. Very excited about that. When the Dodgers were in Cincinnati, there was a lot of chatter amongst the Dodgers media beat about how absurd the travel is, which normally it's like you roll your eyes and then you look at the schedule and you're like, wait a minute,
like,
that's absurd.
That's wild.
Yeah, like that is ridiculous. Last series, the Phillies take 2-3 over the Cardinals. Cardinals squeak and went out on Sunday Night Baseball, but the Phillies still the best record in the National League. And the Cardinals, who are now 28-29, and if the season ended today, they would be in the postseason. And I guess to Milwaukee to play the Brewers, that would be interesting. Anyway, anything from this series for the Phillies of Philadelphia?
I was there on Friday to see the Phillies, and I saw those uniforms in person, the City Connects. Every single piece of swag related to those City Connect uniforms is awesome. Like the t-shirts, the hats, the hoodies, all that stuff's great. But the uniforms are just pure unadulterated butt.
All the ancillary stuff is good. Got it.
Is good. Friend of the show, WashU grad, Ryan Lutis makes his MLB debut on Saturday. Pitching against the Phillies, scoreless frame. We did it, Joe.
No strikeouts yet. We're still waiting on that first K. But he got three outs, which is pretty sweet.
Got to pitch to contact, baby. The funniest moment of the series was on Sunday, with Taijuan Walker, who has been the Phillies' worst pitcher this season, feels like he's pitched on Sunday Night Baseball 12 times this year somehow. He allows two early two-run homers, and Phillies fans start chanting, "We want Turnbull," in reference to Spencer Turnbull, who is a late offseason, one-year, $2 million ad who was in the rotation because Walker got hurt in camp. Turnbull was incredible to start the season, then moved to the pen when Walker got back. And for Phillies fans to be chanting about their fifth starter spot is just perfect. It's so funny.
It's also funny because I believe this is also in reference to the fact that he threw three perfect dominant innings out of the bullpen on Saturday, which is also interesting because he had not, but he had allowed runs in four straight outings out of the pen. Like the transition to the bullpen had not really been going well. And then, you know, you stretch him out a bit and he's nails in those middle innings on Saturday. So yeah, it is a very strange situation. Of course, Taijuan Walker's making 10 times as much money. And so that's going to keep him in the rotation for at least a while. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how important this is really, but it is kind of a strange dynamic.
You want to know something? Neither of these gentlemen will be starting a postseason game for the Philadelphia Phillies. And it's
definitely
so
not the
it's
plan
not
for them to be doing that.
The biggest deal in the world. They did dodge a bullet on Saturday. Ranger Suarez took a ball off of his pitching hand on a comebacker. All the tests on that were positive and that they were negative. And so he presumably will have a little bit of rest. The Phillies and the Mets head to London this weekend. So their schedule is pretty loosey-goosey.
Okay,
yeah. So he's presumably going to be fine. That is all of the baseball. We did it. We told you everything you needed to know.
Yes. While we did just talk about Major League Baseball for almost an hour, a few minutes on the other baseball and softball we watched over the weekend, Jake. Let's just quickly begin with Birmingham Southern, the story that has taken the nation by storm, the Division III school that closed officially on Friday, and I watched them hit a walk-off home run with my two eyes in person on Saturday. The Birmingham Southern Panthers, their season unfortunately ended on Sunday when they surrendered a walk-off home run to the ultimate Division III villains, the Wisconsin Whitewater Warhawks, who for narrative sake, like it honestly was perfect for them to lose to them. It sucks because nobody likes Whitewater that's not associated with Whitewater. They are a D3 powerhouse that has won everything there is to win. They are ridiculously talented. They are very good. They have a good chance to win this year. We'll see. Hopefully the Salve Seahawks take them down today. But for Whitewater to be the team to eliminate them was both very hard to watch and very fitting. The Birmingham Southern story was amazing. Talking to their players, talking to their coaches, being around them a little bit, because I got to go there for a couple days this weekend, was so cool. And it was it lived up to it, right? And the fact that they even got there at all was amazing, and they got all this attention as they deserved. And we're wishing the best for everybody involved in that program, for all those students who are going to look for another school to go to, let alone for another team to play for. I'm sure that I already heard of a bunch that are going to go be playing D1 next year. Maybe some will be going to play D3. But it was a pretty amazing story. And to their head coach Jan Weisberg and all those players there. Josh Learson, Hanson McCown, who I spent a lot of time talking to over the weekend, really good guys, and just rooting for that whole program and rooting for those kids and those coaches and everything moving forward.
I know this is so niche, but I really want to explain to people who don't follow Division III sports, so all of you, that Wisconsin Whitewater was the team that knocked off Birmingham Southern on a walk-off home run, that the Warhawks
that
put
they
an
came
end
back
to this story, that they came back to win this game. Is so fitting. Whitewater, when I was a freshman, they won football, basketball, and baseball in the same year.
Yep.
They have an abnormally large student body
for a D3 school.
A Division III school.
It's over 10,000 kids, which is most of every other school competing in the World Series this week is, you know, 2,000 kids.
And that doesn't take away anything from the kids on Whitewater who are just out there trying to win. But just from a narrative perspective. Just to let everyone know, Whitewater, they are the Yankees. They are the evil villains of all Division III sports. Yeah. And it is both tragic that they did it and perfect that it was them. Division I, who knows what Division II sports are? We really have no idea. Division I baseball regionals, really fun. I mean, there's just so much going on. If you want to hear us talk about it, we do a college podcast with our friend Stephen Schock, the Big Donkey. Probably record that tomorrow. Just outstanding baseball, squeeze play on ESPN with Mike Rooney and Chris Burr, Chris Button. It's unbelievable. It's Red Zone for college baseball, except there's 16 games going on basically at one time, and it's so overwhelming. And the games just are totally off the rails. No one knows how to pitch. It's just a rainstorm of homers. It's very entertaining. The lack of quality of the baseball in some ways makes it better because anything can happen at any time.
Yep. And we got a few more games going on Monday to kind of round out the super regional field. Maybe we'll touch on that in the coming weeks to kind of let people know, oh, these are the top draft picks that are still playing. A bunch of them were eliminated over the weekend, but still a lot more exciting stuff to watch there. And then I will also finish this pod with a shout out of the Women's College World Series, which I will admit does not necessarily have the most. There's fewer. If you're looking for a Birmingham Southern story in the Women's College World Series, you will not find it. It is a lot of very main brand teams. However, Nijeri Kennedy, the pitcher for Stanford, who's going to try to keep their season alive against Texas today, she is unbelievable. One of the best softball pitchers I've ever watched. And I'm definitely rooting for Stanford, who is inexplicably the underdog in this tournament. So watch some softball this week. It is fantastic television.
I have a rant before we get out of here.
Do it.
The last couple days on the Twitter machine, maybe giving oxygen to this isn't the right move, but I wanted to bring it up. There have been a number of tweets dunking on broadcast calls from women broadcasters. Okay. Namely, I'll say it by name, a friend of the show, Danny Wexelman on the D1 college baseball side, and Jenny Kavnar, who is in her first year as the broadcaster of the Oakland A's. There are a couple different things I want to say. Just because your ears aren't attuned to the sound of women calling a baseball game does not automatically make it bad. Okay, that's the first thing. Number two, does everyone nail every call? Absolutely not. Are there some clips that Jenny Kavnar and Danny Wex and other women would probably want back in terms of the call specifically? Yes, but that is the case with tons of broadcasters, male or female. To pick out these specific clips and to dunk on these women for broadcasting games is lazy. It is being done in bad faith. The people who are doing it for their own agendas. It is really unfortunate, and they know it'll do numbers on the internet if they do it. The entire thing is very disheartening, and the idea that these two women are benefiting or getting these jobs or opportunities only because they are women is just so disrespectful to them. And I'm just going to say, Danny Wex, who's a friend of us, we have known her for a long time, is a freaking grinder. This is someone who goes to high school tournaments and covers them in Florida. She's been covering college baseball for years. She works her freaking ass off. And the idea that she is only getting these opportunities because of her gender is total BS. And look, she had a silly call. Okay. Often when you clip a call from a game and you put it on the internet and it seems a little odd, it's because it was within the context of a conversation that they were having on the broadcast. That doesn't make the call good, but the idea that it deserves to be dunked on online is just really freaking ticks me off. And I felt like I wanted to say something. So
totally,
if you
agree.
See these things, yep. Online, if you see these clips online, just look into them, like watch them and try and understand the context before you alley-oop dunk them down into the hoop, right? Especially in like for Jenny C., it's her first year as an everyday broadcaster. That's hard. That takes time to ease into the role. And I think this is more like for Jenny, people are taking regular home run calls and being like, this is a joke. And just because she's a woman. And it, yep. if we want to have more types of people care about the sport, having women call games is a really, really big deal because it is a voice that young girls can recognize and mm-hmm. And teaches them that they can be a part of the sport too. And so if you are at all a part of dunking on these people, just please unsubscribe from our podcast and F all the way off.
Yep. Everything you said is correct. The only thing I will add is what you sort of mentioned there. This is an extremely difficult job. And anyone that it wants to hop in these comments and say, I could do this, I would love to see you try.
We tried and we were horrible at it.
We couldn't do this in a million. It is an extremely challenging job. So I just wanted to, like, I know that's obvious to a lot of people, but as someone who's tried it before, it is, I had experiences trying it in college early on. I think I've talked catastrophe, horrible. And I was like, I don't want to do this. This is so hard. I don't know. And again, you're pulling out 5 seconds of a 3.5 hour broadcast that was probably mostly very, very good. And I've watched some of Danny Wex and I've watched Jenny and I watched what like they're good at what they do. You're going to have bad calls all over the place. But that's the other main thing is, oh man, you think you could do this? Huh. That is as insulting as it gets because
people always ask us this. Oh, do you want to be commentators? No, we're good at this thing. Why would I want to do the thing I'm bad at?
All right. Thank you for sharing. I totally agree with everything you shared and glad you said something. All right. That's it. We went a little bit over an hour, but it's great to be back. Yeah.
Listen to the guy in the corned beef university hat. Okay. For those of you watching on YouTube.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching on YouTube. Leave a comment on YouTube. Let us know if you are enjoying this, my new background. Shouts out to the Birmingham Southern Panthers. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And we will be back on Wednesday. I'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, back on the move. Not actually moving, but I will be in a hotel in Pittsburgh ahead of Paul Skeens pitching against the Dodgers and after Tyler Glasnow and Jared Jones on Tuesday night. So I'm very excited to see that and talk about that. But until then, any final words, Jake Mintz?
Yeah, it'll be great to see future Dodger Paul Skeens. Being pulled away.
Okay, bye. Talk to you later this week.